Hello, a very good day to you all, and welcome back to Marca's Eye on La Liga as we continue to march our way through all of the big stories from Spain's top flight. I'm your host, Ollie Wilson, and I'm joined by, once again, two of the finest footballing minds that Marca has to offer. Joining me on the show today, two men who are in the ideal position, really, to be commenting on everything that's gone on over the weekend. A man who was quite literally boots on the ground in Barcelona this weekend, Mr. Ewan McTeer. Ewan, how are you doing today, mate?
Yeah, very good. I've been enjoying lots of football over the last month, and now we've got another international break to navigate. But, all good.
Feet up for you with a hot toddy, isn't it? I mean, the international break for you guys.
Oh, but I wouldn't want to do that, you know. Too much football to talk about.
All right, okay, fair enough. And as well, joining you on the show today, Mr. Jason Pettigrove joining us here. Jason, how you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm like the proverbial London bus, aren't I? You don't hear from me for ages, and then two come along in the space of a week.
It's just back off the bench from injury and suddenly back with the goals flying in. It's what we want to see, mate. No, appreciate you taking the time out to join us on the show, as always, man. We should really start in Barcelona. Plenty of off-the-pitch antics to be discussed, perhaps at another time, and certainly, I think, for another podcast when it's involved. We're talking about the football rather than the political side of things. But there was, obviously, with everything that went on with the Catalonian referendum, and the riots in Barcelona, there was still a game of football to be played. Barcelona against Las Palmas, played behind closed doors in a quite empty Camp Nou. Very surreal watching that on TV, that game, in a completely empty stadium in one of Europe's largest stadiums, footballing stadiums. And gentlemen, I think the first question is, before we look at the game itself, is should this game have even been played with everything that was going on? Were players likely to be settled? At one point, it must have been about an hour and a half before kickoff, it was ruled that the match wasn't going to be played, and then quick as a flash it was suddenly back on again, but behind closed doors, and it all seemed very much out of control, which I guess the city was at that time.
Yeah, so I think at the end of the day, Ollie, we don't need to sort of talk very much about what happened in Catalonia, because we've all seen the images. That doesn't really need further comment. I think the whole issue really was why it was played, and that came down to Bartomeu making a decision. I think it was about 40 minutes in the end before the game. I mean, it was utter chaos, wasn't it? Yeah, you know, there was things coming out that it wasn't going ahead, then it was, and then Barcelona couldn't unilaterally make the decision because they were going to lose 3 points, forfeit the match, have another 3-point penalty, and I think a €12,000 fine. And actually, one of the sort of movements around the club is Manifest Blaugrana is the name of the movement, have sort of come out today and suggested that, you know, a €12,000 fine and a 6-point deduction really is a small price to pay to sort of maintain the dignity of the club. Bartomeu's sort of response to that has basically been, well, at the end of the day, if we'd have got to Mayen, we'd have lost the league because of those 6 points. That, you know, there would have been issues then, which I kind of get, but I suppose it's, you know, where do Barcelona position themselves within the sort of the wider debate? You know, they've always been supporters of free speech. We always see, like, the Catalan flags at the ground, even though sort of UEFA have banned them. You know, the right to vote and stuff like that, they've always been in support of that. So I think we can infer through their carefully worded statements that they do support independence. But as you said, the sight of a sort of an eerily empty Camp Nou was something that I don't think anyone could have foreseen, to be honest.
It's just it just still strikes me as very odd how all over the place it was in the end, considering, you know, you think about Barcelona as a club that is so well organised in the way they're structured, obviously the youth players coming through and everything. But unfortunately, when it came to the off-the-pitch stuff this weekend, it was a complete mess, a complete shambles, and surely would have affected the players. I mean, had that game been against perhaps more prominent opposition, what if Sevilla were in town? There's a likelihood that they'd have perhaps lost that game anyway, just for being kind of ill-prepared and all over the place, and perhaps hearts and minds with family members and friends of what was going on at the time. It all seemed very ill-contrived and put together, Ewan, in terms of what we're used to seeing, as I say, from this club.
Yeah, it really was all a strange atmosphere around the game, around the ground, and yeah, like you say, I mean, it was, and some of the players said this as well, it wasn't wasn't the easiest game to play, wasn't the easiest game to focus on. And yeah, like you say, if it hadn't been a Palmer side that had just lost their manager, then maybe they would have struggled, and they did struggle a bit. They struggled in the first half, and I'm sure we'll get onto that, the game itself, in just a little bit. But yeah, it was the sort of communication, I think, around it all wasn't the best. Most fans didn't find out till, I think, with less than half an hour to go that the game was going to be played behind closed doors. And Jason touched upon the fact that they were looking to get the game, when they found out they couldn't get the game moved without facing a points deduction, then they decided to play it. And in the end, that probably is the decision that the players wanted to make. But then you have to ask, well, did it have to be played behind closed doors? And Bartomeu has said that he wanted to sort of make a protest. He was talking about how the game was broadcast to more than 170 different countries, and all of them will have seen an empty Camp Nou, and a lot of people who had no idea what was going on in Catalonia will have thought, why is that happening? And they'll have researched it, they'll have found out. And I suppose it was one way to raise awareness, but there's a cost to that, and that's having a lot of fans who were upset. A lot of fans were being interviewed outside the ground, asking, where are you going to go and watch the game? And most of them, their response was, I'm not watching the game now. I'm too annoyed at the club. And you know, considering how many people had been annoyed at Barcelona for their poor summer of transfer business and amongst other things, this definitely isn't an issue that this definitely isn't something they want to provoke. And we saw they had the motion of no confidence that in the end it was stopped on September 27th, but the team behind it thought they had until October 2nd. And if they had, they might have got a lot more signatures outside the Camp Nou. Firstly, because there were so many people there not in the ground, and secondly, because there was an awful lot of disgruntlement. And that's just the Barcelona fans, never mind the travelling supporters from Las Palmas, literally the furthest away team in La Liga.
I think the other thing, though, if I can just jump in there, I think what was the kicker for why President Bartomeu played the game behind closed doors, there was a supporters group that actually left a message basically saying that if the game did go ahead, that they would storm the pitch in the first minute and basically incite everybody else to do the same and sort of make a protest that way. So if you look at it on that basis, then there is the issue of supporter safety. Even though the police and the security have guaranteed that the supporters would be safe, if you've got a group of supporters that are going to suggest that they will absolutely incite a pitch invasion, it might not be the most popular thing to say, but I think you have to then applaud Bartomeu for then coming to the decision that he did. I think the other thing we haven't touched on either, La Liga chief Javier Tebas knew that this game would coincide with the referendum. He knew that there would possibly be issues with the referendum. So why wasn't the game played on a Saturday? I know the suggestion's been because of Champions League and tiredness and everything else. That's an absolute load of rubbish. You know, the game could have been played on Saturday evening.
Atletico Madrid and Sevilla both played on Saturday. And Sevilla, just, you know, another aside, they played at, you know, 4 in the afternoon in a sweltering hot Sevilla, which was another ridiculous sort of scheduling time. But yeah, Atletico Madrid and Sevilla both played on the Saturday. So yeah, like, you're right, Jason, there's no reason why Barcelona couldn't have as well.
Well, I wanted to come on to Javier Tebas and talk about La Liga in their role in this. I mean, shouldn't they have made a common sense call? We've seen games get called off at the last minute before without punishment for various reasons. I mean, I'm not saying this was perhaps as imminent danger as there was with the Manchester United-Bournemouth game towards the end of, was it two seasons ago in the Premier League, where an unknown device was found. It turned out it was left from a training exercise, but the stadium was evacuated and they played the match later on in the midweek. But it's a similar sort of circumstance in that there is something going on that affects the safety of people perhaps going to the game or who would have been going to the game. And so rather than having it behind closed doors and carrying on once they've worked out a way to shut people out and to ensure the safety of people, instead just move it to a midweek or some point later on. I mean, again, I know bad weather is different to as an act of God compared to what we saw going on in Barcelona, but we had the Celta de Vigo game against Real Madrid last season postponed for months on end until the last week of the season. That it is possible for games to be moved around. And this was surely one that La Liga should have just made a common sense move of saying, look, this is all over the place. We can't be flip-flopping all over the place 40 minutes before a game. We'll call it off. We'll move it to another time in the schedule, even if it means that we have to come back 5 days earlier from the Christmas break or something like that, and we'll just get this done at another point.
Yeah, but Javier Tebas, he might have one of the best products in terms of the league, but he doesn't have any common sense. I mean, he shows that in the sense that La Liga fixtures are generally only, you know, fixed 2 weeks before the game. Mm. Whereas like someone like the Premier League, for example, you know at the start of the season which weekend your fixtures are on, and you pretty much know if it's going to be a Saturday or a Sunday. Even if the TV schedules alter it slightly, you still know weeks and weeks in advance. Spain haven't done that. It's still, even now, the fans are not looked after in that respect. Is that, you know, up to 2 weeks before the game, it can move from, you know, a Saturday to a Sunday, even to a Monday. And if you're trying to book flights and everything like that, it's very, very expensive for the sort of the average person to book flights sort of that close to a game. And I think, you know, there's other things that he's done that don't really make a lot of sense. You don't want to drill down into the whole sort of thing about, you know, Spain against Catalonia and stuff like that. You know, there's even a possibility, you know, dare we to suggest it, that there could be something like that. It's, you know, he's a very proud Spaniard, as some Barcelona players are very proud Catalans. And I don't know, maybe he's just putting the cat amongst the pigeons by saying, no, you play or you get your points deducted. Again, you know, sort of forcing Barca into a corner, as it were.
I mean, it's obviously a very difficult situation for La Liga, but even somebody on a right-hand man of Javier Tebas would have been able to say, like, look, guys, this isn't the way we can operate it. Does it look bad on La Liga for the way this has gone down, Ewan, as a global brand, if you will, and as an organisation?
I think it absolutely does, and I think the sight of an empty Camp Nou is part of that. Once people have seen that, and as I mentioned earlier, it was 170 something countries this match was broadcast in, as almost every Barcelona and Real Madrid match is. So many people around the world have seen this, and so many people have seen an empty Camp Nou, and a lot of people will have looked into the reasons for that, and when they've done so, they'll have found out that Barcelona wanted to make a protest in Catalonia. They might not have heard about it. One of the other reasons, as we've just been saying, is that La Liga refused to move this game to another date, and a lot of people are going to sort of, I don't know, they're going to, some people will blame La Liga for this because they refused to negotiate because they put it on October 1st anyway, when they knew for months that this referendum was going to be happening. So yeah, I really, really think it does affect La Liga's brand in a negative way, and Barcelona have even suggested that they might take this matter to UEFA and to FIFA to really just, you know, put La Liga in front of the football in courts and sort of almost shame them a little bit and try and find out why there was absolutely no possibility of this game being moved in what we've said are quite exceptional circumstances. So yeah, it was not a good look at all for La Liga.
It's had a bit of fallout with the national team as well. Gerard Piqué has been reasonably vocal in his support of the referendum, what went on the weekend. Obviously not supporting the violence that took place. And it's filtered into the national team, as I say, with reports this morning that Piqué was jeered at training when he turned out for the national team by fans watching. There's also been a breakdown between he and Sergio Ramos in that centre-back position as a partnership, and that's meant to be on really thin ice, the relationship between those two. And also rumours and reports that Piqué is set to walk out and quit on the Spanish national team as well. We'll move into the national team discussion and the games, etc. But this is having an impact throughout squads now and the national team in terms of its chemistry. Normally it's Barcelona and Real Madrid rivalries dividing. Now it seems it's become even more political in the national team.
I think if we just take the thing about the sort of the fans being there first of all, Ollie, again, that shows a lack of common sense. I think it's entirely
yes.
It's entirely predictable after what's happened that if they're going to allow Spanish supporters most of whom, you know, in general terms, support, if we can say, Spanish clubs as opposed to Catalan clubs. It was obvious that, Piqué was going to be booed. He was going to have, you know, banners shown against him and stuff like that. Things got so bad that the Guardia Civil, the Spanish police, had to get involved to calm them down. Now, to me, that is a complete lack of responsibility on the national team's part, the people surrounding the national team. After what had happened, there was no need for the fans to be there. Getting away from that and talking about the wider issue, it is becoming incredibly divisive. You know, through no fault of PK's, he's almost being seen as like the standard bearer, as it were. But perhaps he has to go away and have a sort of a long, hard think about what his presence in the side means for Spain going forward. I mean, you know, there's no doubt at all that the team are going to be worse off without him. But given that he was retiring after the World Cup anyway, does he really want to become, you know, a scapegoat, I suppose? Because I think it's going to upset the equilibrium in the team over these next few months. And then I think if Spain weren't to do very well, he's going to be the one that's going to bear the brunt of it. And I don't think that's fair on him, or, you know, or anybody else. And, you know, we haven't even talked about either the sort of the abuse that is surely going to come his way at La Liga away grounds for the rest of the season.
Well, and perhaps the whole of the Barcelona squad. I mean, you look at the away shirt for Barca, it's the Catalan flag, basically, isn't it? The second strip for them. So it's going to be interesting how they're received as they go around playing their away games around the rest of the league this season. In terms of Piqué, I mean, I see what you're saying there, Jason, but obviously from the level-headed outsider who's not politically impassioned in this movement in any way, shape or form, it does seem ludicrous that Piqué would be used as that scapegoat when, from all accounts and all that we know of him, aside from the odd incident on the pitch and complaining about referees too much, he's a consummate professional, particularly at the national team level. And for that to then become, as you say, a kind of a scapegoat for Spanish national team problems, would be ludicrous of fans to think that.
Well, it would be, and as you say, I mean, he is the consummate professional. He's also a very proud Catalan, as you said on sort of very many occasions. His teammates are very proud Spaniards, but I think, again, all it does, it ignites the debate. It makes the debate, in fact, wider. It brings people across the world into the debate to give them more understanding. At the end of the day, all it should be about is he good enough for the national team? Yes. And that's the end of it. You know, all the other stuff is personal. It should be taken to one side and dealt with however it's dealt with. At the end of the day, he forms a partnership with Ramos at the back that is one of the best partnerships in world football for national teams. And that should be the end of that particular debate.
It's probably quite positive for the Spanish national team that they're not playing Italy in Madrid this international break, isn't it, Ewan?
Yeah, I mean, they're obviously still not qualified for the World Cup, but you know, and they're so close. They've basically knocked the door down already, and they're just waiting to step through. They're basically in, so I suppose that's a good thing, because even if it does all, flare up and they maybe drop a point, maybe draw a game, then you know it might not be too consequential. But yeah, it's not. If it had happened with the last round of fixtures with a game against Italy at the Bernabeu, then you know. Maybe this kind of situation would be enough to cause the team some problems. I mean, of course, if Piqué is the best, one of the top two best centre backs in Spain, and Ramos is the other, then you play them together. But at the same time, if their relationship has completely broken down, then you know, we've seen in the past when there's a lack of harmony in squads, even in the Spain squad, and it can have an effect. You know. When Spain were winning so much, that was partly because of the unity and partly because of the way they were able to, you know, leave their sort of club differences at the door. And if they can still leave all their Real Madrid and Barcelona colours at the door, but now also leave all of their opinions on the Catalan matter at the door as well, then they should be fine. But when you're having to deal with all of these sort of different situations, and when you know everyone has such different opinions, eventually there might be one straw that kind of just breaks the camel's back and makes that relationship just not able to function any further.
Piqué, of course, was booed during that game in the Bernabeu against Italy, even though he was wearing the national team shirt, and it would be a very frosty reception indeed, you imagine, for him were they playing in Madrid against the Italians once again. Instead, they take on Albania and they're away in Israel as well. Another 8-0 predicted, perhaps, in one of these two games, gents? I mean, Albania were very much one of those sides that were like the hipster's choice, weren't they, in international football a summer ago?
They were, but...
Yeah, they were.
Sorry, you can jump in on this one.
Two hipsters trying to jump in on the same comment. I love that. Both back in their Albania love. Sorry.
They were with Gianni Di Biasi, the current Alaves coach, but, you know, they've sort of had a bit more of a tough time in this qualifying campaign, which you would completely expect when you've got Spain and Italy in your group. So to have them at home, I'm sure that's... I don't think it'll be anything like an 8-0, but that should be a victory. And then Israel, you know, every away game is always difficult in international football, but again, they've had a disappointing campaign. And yeah, like I said, maybe it's a good thing that these are sort of two of the easier fixtures in the group that Spain have as the last two to sort of get into Russia and to sort of overcome this very difficult off the pitch and in the stands situation.
And I just want to quickly add to that, sorry, obviously the game on Friday is in Alicante, so it's a home game. You know, let's see what the reaction is from the crowd then. I mean, I, like you, and expect it to be a relatively comfortable win, not like before, but, you know, a good few goals in it. But if for any reason across the week in training things haven't been going so well because of this situation that's manifested itself, it'll be interesting to see what happens then if there aren't goals on the board in the first, say, half an hour, 40 minutes, and how much the crowd sort of, I suppose, divide the team almost, as it were, because PK we would expect to play.
Yeah, it's, there's going to be plenty of eyes on that game against Albania in Alicante, as you say, Jason. Just finally on the international side of things, I know he's not playing in La Liga anymore, but how important is it that Alvaro Morata is establishing himself as a proper starting out-and-out striker at Chelsea in the Premier League for this national team? Of course, he was always like the super sub, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, if you will, for Real Madrid over the last few seasons. And, of course, did very well at Juventus with his time there as well. But he's now starting to turn into a big forward presence, banging the goals in at the start of this season. That's going to reap big rewards for the Spanish national team in that front line. Because it doesn't mean they have to play this false number nine. It doesn't mean they have to rely on someone like Diego Costa either. It's a new, younger Costa almost coming through.
Yeah, I think what we've seen is a player that's loved by his coach. And when you're loved by your coach and you're given minutes on the pitch, your confidence grows. And as we all know, it doesn't matter how much players are paid. If you've not got confidence, you're not going to play as well. And aside from the injury he's just picked up, Morata's been banging them in. And not just that, he looks every inch, you know, the Spanish centre forward. And I think, you know, going forward, he's going to be one of the main men for Spain. A fantastic acquisition for Chelsea. And I feel sorry for Real Madrid that they sort of took the decision they did. It looks now that it was always just a bringing him back from Juve so they could sell him on for a lot more money. You know, perhaps longer term that might be seen as a bad decision.
All right, let's double back around and get back to the La Liga action from the weekend. Your final thoughts on this Barcelona game against Las Palmas then in the eerie, empty Camp Nou. A 3-0 victory in the end. Lionel Messi with two goals. Sergio Busquets as well on the score sheet. A bit of a rarity, that one. But they needed something to get them out of a bit of a hole that was the opening 45 minutes. A little chippy as well with a handful of bookings in the first half as well for Barcelona. Wasn't comfortable at all, as we touched on. How uncomfortable do you think it actually was for Barca then on the weekend?
I think it was very uncomfortable. I think the players have come out, again, PK, but one or two others have come out and said it was one of the worst experiences they've had in their professional career. I think had Barcelona drawn or lost, it would have been entirely understandable. But not enough credit, really, for me, has been given to Ernesto Valverde again. That's now the ninth win in a row. And, you know, he got his players up for the game despite everything that was surrounding it. In the end, maybe the 3-0 victory perhaps flattered Barcelona, but they got the job done. And that's not received anywhere near the attention that it's deserved.
Well, I guess it is a secondary story, if you will, in Barcelona for everything that has taken place, the football in itself, let alone Valverde's work. Although, as you say, Jason, and we've touched on it a couple of times, that Valverde has stepped into this Barca side and is running the show and basically keeping all the big egos at the moment just under wraps and making sure they all stand in line and do their job. A comfortable 3-0 victory just about in the end in the second half for Barca then on the weekend. Real Madrid with a 2-0 win over Espanyol. But Ronaldo is not firing goals in at the start of this season. Jason, I saw you were tweeting out a stat. It's the worst start he's ever had to a La Liga season in terms of goals. Is that going to be a problem down the line if Ronaldo is struggling in front of goal this season for Madrid? Or have they got enough in the fact that Isco is just such a rising talent who continues to get higher and higher at this point in this, in his career?
Yeah, I think it's a problem for him personally. I mean, I actually don't think he's doing too much wrong apart from not hitting the back of the net. I think I read that he's had 20 shots on goal in the games that he's played, and unfortunately they've not gone in. Normally, you know, a fair few of them would go in. But what we did see, again, unfortunately from him, was in kicking out one of the Espanyol players late in the game. And I think it's that part of the game that perhaps he needs to look at and Madrid need to look at, because he doesn't need to be doing that. You know, is it still the issue that he doesn't like other players stealing what he perceives as his limelight? He wants to be the man. Is it because Messi's on 11 goals in La Liga already and he's not? And perhaps Pichichi is already well out of the picture. Who knows? He's not really doing anything wrong. He's making the runs that he always makes. He's getting chances. He's just not sticking them away. So I think it's a personal issue and a frustrating one for him. But as for Real, as a unit, no, I don't think they're going to struggle for goals across the season. They've got a few injury problems, which, again, across the season could be an issue. But goals-wise, no. I mean, they've not had the best start. But we're still only, you know, a few games into the season. So with people like, as you say, Isco, Benzema to come back, I expect Bale to start firing again soon. They've got goals in them from all over the pitch.
A debut as well for Ashraf Hakimi in the Real Madrid side, the 18-year-old Moroccan. Ewan, I'm not going to lie to you here. I'm not completely clued up on Ashraf Hakimi as a player. Where's he come from? And is this somebody who's likely going to feature for Real Madrid in the long term and part of Zidane's rotation perhaps for this season?
Yeah, I mean, he's an interesting player because, you know, this was him making his debut with Real Madrid, but he's already an international. He's already scored a goal for Morocco in this World Cup qualifying campaign, and we have to remember he is a fullback. So he's already trusted at a sort of international level, and he might well end up at a World Cup, and yet he's obviously struggling to get into that Real Madrid squad, even though he's in the squad this season, and at 18-year-old, that's still a massive achievement. But with Dani Carvajal being the sort of just the kind of one of the players who racks up the most minutes in this team, there was just no chance for him to get a look in that side, and unfortunately Carvajal has suffered quite what looks like a more serious than it first sounds a viral issue, and yeah, he looks set to be out for several weeks, and yeah, it looks like Kraft's going to have a chance in the side, and he seems he's done everything right so far. He's impressed throughout the youth categories. Like I said, he's impressed enough to get an international call up. He's impressed Zidane enough to be in the squad. And now, finally, he'll actually get some minutes in the first team because Carvajal, he really is one of the players who at the end of every season has played some of the most minutes. And yeah, he'll get a bit of a run-in in the side. And I think he played quite well against Espanyol. It wasn't, you know, if Real Madrid did have any struggles in that game, it was mostly in attack, as we've sort of touched on. But, you know, he did his job. You almost hardly noticed him, which is probably the best compliment you can make of a defender in his debut. So, yeah, again, just another example of Real Madrid having some really good squad depth and the whole concept of next man up, you know, step in, do your job, and that's what he did.
In terms of Isco, just finally, I mean, some people are saying that Isco can get better and better. Isco's saying that Madrid are going to get better and better. How much left is there to come from Isco, a man who we've put to bed a few years ago in terms of maybe falling short in his career, suddenly having the 12 months of his life at the moment, and particularly with the injuries and the lack of goals from Ronaldo, Bale, of course, suffering a lot this season with nasty niggles that are keeping him out of the side and out of Wales's last two World Cup qualifiers. The void is there to be filled by Isco now, to make Real Madrid almost his side and put them on his back quite a bit.
He's doing now what he did for Malaga a few years ago. He's the player, or he's become the player that everyone expected him to be. How odd that it was as a result of injuries last year where he got a few games under his belt. Again, we only talked about confidence a few minutes ago. He was given the opportunity, he was given time on the pitch in his preferred role, sort of just behind the front two. And he's working wonders. I mean, his nickname is sort of Maggio or Magic for a reason. He's a spectacular player. And he's the sort of player that wins games on his own, as he did against Espanyol this past weekend.
Yeah, a brace for Isco once again, continuing his fine start to the La Liga season and cracking on where he left off last year. Gentlemen, I want to just dive into kind of, we always refer to it as the best of the rest, if you will, those that will be fighting for kind of second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth in the La Liga table. At the moment, it's very bunched up and there's some odd names up there. I mean, it's not odd for the La Liga fan who's followed it for a number of years now to be seeing Valencia sat third place in the table. Slightly odd perhaps to see Sevilla above them in second, although they've been on the up and up, of course, over the last few years. But considering all the trouble Valencia have had, and we've spoken about how they've bought very well, they've anchored the midfield with Kondogbia, Zaza, to the amazement of West Ham United fans in the UK, is scoring goals. They are maintaining this excellent start to the season, still unbeaten. Only Barcelona, Atletico Madrid and Valencia are unbeaten. And you wouldn't have had decent odds, you would have had decent odds on that if you'd been putting some money on it to start the campaign. Sevilla, as I say, up there as well. Betis, who we kept an eye on before the season started, are having a strong start. And Leganes, only 3 goals conceded. They can't score at the moment. They've only bagged 5 this season. But only 3 conceded. Only Barcelona have a better defence than them. Sevilla, the other team, that have only conceded 3. They're putting themselves up there for a very good start to the season. I'm just wondering, out of this pack, this group, even Villarreal is starting to get back to form as well, by the way, after a sluggish start. But out of this group, who is going to be able to maintain this sort of pace for the longest period of time? And where do you think these sides are going to fall by the wayside as the season goes on? Where they're going to fall short in their squad depth, or perhaps just in tired legs or in experience at being up and around this end of the table?
I think they all have a good chance of really maintaining this fight for Champions League football. It's going to be one of the most interesting races for third and fourth in a long time. I think eventually Atletico Madrid should, and we're assuming Real Madrid will be back up there as well, but eventually Atletico Madrid should pull away, I think, and wrap up that third place that they always do. But that race for fourth, it really is so fascinating. Valencia, Villarreal, even Real Sociedad, who started the season so well. They've had a few difficult weeks, but again, this is a squad packed with talent as well. And I think European football, the teams in European football this season, this might be one of the reasons that Valencia have such a good chance. The fact that they're not in midweek action this season, and you mentioned there which teams will have tired legs. I don't think Valencia will be one of them. They do have quite a lot of options on the bench, especially in attacking roles, so they should be able to rotate, they should be able to enjoy the complete midweek off. And yeah, Valencia, they really have to. I think at the start of the season, if anyone had said this year was the year they get straight back to the Champions League, I think that would have seemed a bit of a stretch. But the way they've started the season, as you mentioned, unbeaten, there's no reason why Valencia can't keep this up all the way. And whether they do eventually hold off Sevilla or Villarreal or Real Sociedad or even, you know, Real Betis keep this up as well. And we have to remember Athletic Club as well. They're always in the mix, although Iker Muniain's unfortunate injury might impact them. But there's just so many teams this season in that battle for Champions League football, or at least it looks that way right now.
Yeah, I think Ewan sort of picked up a point that I was going to make as well with Valencia. I think not only that as well is in Marcelino, they've got a coach that is very studious in the way he works, and he'll pick the sort of the team and the formation based on the opponent. Whereas you have somebody like Eduardo Berizzo at Sevilla, who's just got an attacking based game as he had when he was the sort of manager at Celta. And you talk about tired legs, obviously Sevilla are in the Champions League as well. What's interesting is out of all of the top six, they've only scored 9 goals, which is by far the least. And given that they play an attacking game, they're always on the front foot. That will be hugely disappointing for the team. Yes, they've got a good defensive record with 3, but, you know, goals win games. So I think out of that group, I expect to see Sevilla drop down in the next few weeks. Betis, I'm not so sure, because in Quique Setién, they've got a very, very good coach. We saw at Las Palmas last year how good he was, and once he had suggested that he was going, just they sort of fell away, and they've never really recovered from that. Leganés, as you said, have surprised everyone. You know, they've only conceded three themselves, and they were right at the beginning of the season to Getafe and Eibar. I think, again, we always sort of tend to see the same thing in La Liga, don't we? It's like the cream rises to the top eventually. Sometimes it might take a bit longer than others, but generally it's sort of Barca, Real Madrid, or Real Madrid-Barca, followed by Atletico, and then that sort of gaggle of teams below them, which normally has Sociedad in it, normally has Villarreal in it. Again, it's all about consistency, and squad depth will absolutely come into play. I think, really, the next sort of 6 to 8 weeks are important, because then we're coming in towards the winter break and obviously the January transfer window. Depending where the teams are at that point, it's then for me who out of them buys and sells at best to then push on for that second part of the season, which obviously includes the Copa del Rey in the first few weeks of the new year as well.
It's kind of bad news, you feel, for Atletico Madrid and Real Madrid in particular at the moment, that there is this gaggle of teams around. I mean, Atletico have had a bit of a rough few days with losing the lead against Chelsea in the Champions League at home and losing that one, and have then a draw against Leganés on the weekend, 0-0 on the road. In terms of this gaggle of teams, though, now when Atleti and Madrid play these teams, it's suddenly going to be a case that they've got really something to fight for in terms of keeping these big sides below them down at this position. It just gives a little bit more oomph and added panache to these games. They suddenly become a little grander, a little bigger. More attention will be on them, of course. And it will be a real kick in the behind for perhaps the likes of Leganés and co. that, yeah, we can actually, on our day, if we have a go at these sides, compete with the big boys, and it's worth having a shot at them. And I just feel there could be perhaps a chance that Madrid and Atleti get stuck almost in the mud, if you will, with these teams. Not, and I don't mean that offensively to any of them, with no disrespect to any of these teams, but stuck in and around these teams for a little longer than perhaps we'd expect, and that plays into Barca's hands at extending their lead at the top of the table.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of competitive football this La Liga season, I think, especially when the big teams play these sort of upper middle class La Liga teams. But you mentioned there that, you know, this could benefit Barcelona. In a way, Barcelona have the most to fear, because they haven't really played any of these teams yet. You know, we spoke a few weeks ago about how they had a sort of one of the easier beginnings to the season, and, you know, complete credit to Valverde. I mean, he's made the most of it, and they still have their 100% record, but they haven't played any of the teams yet that are really fighting for one of these Champions League spots. And as you mentioned, you know, Atletico and Real Madrid might be a little bit concerned that they are stuck alongside them right now. But we have to remember, both those teams have already played some of these difficult Champions League contenders. Barcelona haven't, and once they start going away to the likes of Bilbao, which they have coming up quite soon, when they have to go and play Sevilla and Valencia, and these are games that are always difficult, and I think they're going to be even more difficult this season. And we could see one of the lower points totals at the end of the season for the La Liga winners, and not just because, you know, Real Madrid or Barcelona might have had a below par year, but because the competition, I think, this La Liga season is going to be so great.
It's maybe a boost for La Liga in terms of that being able to sell the league. You know how everybody says that the Premier League has become the most entertaining league in the world, and therefore needs to kind of it's the mid-table games that are so competitive, and the big sides struggling against the mid-table sides, that kind of affects that global brand ability for La Liga. It may not be positive for the big two in terms of their TV deals and cashing in on all that money, but it's certainly good for everybody else if they can just start to compete and perhaps just rein in the La Liga leaders at some point. Although I think we're a long, long way off before we see someone like Levante perhaps pulling off a Leicester City or anything like that. I mean, that would be stretching it just a little bit. Gents, thanks very much for your time on this one. We've been kind of all over the place on this podcast, so I appreciate you bearing with us on that, boys, and hopefully catch up with you very soon indeed. Ewan, Mr. E. McTare on Twitter, is that?
Yep, that's right.
So you can catch Ewan on there. If you so wish, send him some abuse if you don't like his views. try not to get too bogged down into the political side of things. So just for the
If you've got any abuse to say in my way, that's right. It's just, you know, at Oliver Wilson.
Oh, cheers. Thank you very much. Yeah, no, I've actually changed it this week. It's at Jason Pettigrove. If anybody wants to find me on there. Jason, thanks very much for joining us as well on the show, mate. At Jason Pettigrove, is it not on Twitter, my good friend?
It's absolutely that, and thank you as always for having me on.
I'm sure you'll be making it a hat-trick of appearances when we come back from the international break. We're going to come back after Spain's trip to Israel and talk about what went on the international break. I'm sure there'll be plenty of stories coming out around the split perhaps in the side and how, of course, the Spanish national team are received at home against Albania this coming Friday. And then before you know it, we're straight back into the La Liga action once again, and the Champions League just round the corner as well after the international break. It all kicks off with Espanyol against Levante when we return, coming back on the Friday. There's some tasty games coming up, including Atletico Madrid hosting Barcelona on that Saturday after the international break. And it couldn't be, again, almost timed worse, having a Madrid side against Barca straight after everything that's gone on over the last few days. To everybody in Barcelona, just take care, be safe. Let's hope that Spain can settle down soon enough. In the meantime, remember to get onto @MarkerInEnglish, @MarkerInEnglish on Twitter, and of course, marker.com/EN, marker.com/EN. Search Marker in English on Facebook, like and rate the homepage on there. And of course, you can find us on Audio Boom and iTunes. Just search I on La Liga. That's I on La Liga. Find us, like and rate the podcast too. Thanks very much, Ewan. Thanks very much, Jason. We'll be back in around about 7 days' time or so. Until then, take care, enjoy the football, and keep your eye on La Liga.